News Radio 840 WHAS welcomes you to Jim Strader Outdoors, the area's leading authority on hunting and fishing. Jim Strader Outdoors is brought to you by Mossy Oak Properties Hart Realty. For the outdoor home of your dreams, call Paul Thomas at 270-524-1980. Gary Roman's Firearm Service Center. Linden Animal Clinic, your pet's best friend. Sportsman's Taxidermy. Visit them at sportsmanstaxidermy.com. A.N. Roth Heating and Cooling, a family-owned business with over 100 years' experience in the Louisville area. Wildlife Habitat Solutions. Check Jim and his team on Facebook at Wildlife Habitat Solutions. And SMI Marine, getting your boat back on the water in no time. To join in on the conversation, call us at 571-8484 inside Louisville, 1-800-444-8484 outside of the metro, and pound 840 for Verizon Wireless callers. Now, sit back and relax and enjoy the next 2 hours of Jim Strader Outdoors.
We came from the West Virginia coal mines and the Rocky Mountains and the Western Skies. I got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. We can skin a buck, run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
Good evening, everyone. Jim Strader broadcasting from the Strader Ranch again tonight. We're still locked out of the studio because of the Chinese COVID virus. But I'm delighted to be here. We're going to do a special edition of Jim Strader Outdoors tonight that's going to revolve around ticks and tick-borne diseases. There's a lot of reasons to do that tonight, but in that regard, I've got my buddy Bob Edwards, who works for Dick's Sporting Goods, in the studio, the Strader studio, that is, with me tonight. And we're going to talk about the tick species that are in Kentucky. We're going to talk about the diseases they carry. We're going to talk about preventatives. And basically, we're going to give you an all-around picture of how to deal with these things. So, again, we'll do that coming back from break. First, let me say that a lot of reason for people to be outdoors, which is one of the biggest reasons that I wanted to do this program now, because we're all getting geared up for checking trail cameras for deer, working food plots, fishing from the bank around ponds and lakes. Squirrel season is opening up here very shortly, so a lot of folks are going to be prowling around in the woods and dove fields, et cetera. And there's ticks in all these environments. So that's the reason I wanted to do this tonight. And I think hopefully you'll find it very educational. I want to give some wildlife notes while we're on the march here. Let me start with the squirrels, because squirrel season is right around the corner in mid-August. And it's going to be upon us before we know it. The nut crop is very, very spotty. And what I mean by that is it depends on your local area. It depends on the elevations in your local area. There's portions of western Kentucky that have a pretty decent acorn crop and decent walnut, for example. There's areas in central Kentucky where the white oaks are pretty well non-existent in a lot of the area. Red oaks are spotty at best. Walnuts, it's tree to tree. It's one of the oddest mass crop years that I believe I've seen in a long, long time. And I'm still kind of getting my wheels under me about what is really going to be the final story with the oak species, because they can carry acorns in the upper branches and they're very, very difficult to see at this time of year. Bottom line, don't go to your favorite grove and expect to see trees bearing nuts as usual. Preseason scouting is a good idea. obviously prevent yourself from ticks, which we're going to as we move through the program. So moving and groove hunting is probably going to be a good idea for most of you. And by that, I mean, you know, doing tree identification as you prowl the woods and see if you hear squirrels rattling in leaves or feeding. Some of the early foods for squirrels like black gum are in pretty short supply. Hackberries in short supply. Cherry is mixed. Some trees have lots of wild cherry, others don't. And these are early season, late summer foods for the squirrels in many, many cases. And it's just really a mixed situation. I think you're mainly going to have to do as much scouting as you do hunting to be successful this time. A lot of us, you know, have favorite hickory trees or pignut trees that we depend upon in normal years, but this is not a normal year. So heads up, if you're going to get out there, expect to see a different type of scenario than normal. Antler growth continues to be amazing. Lots of the deer that I and my friends and scouting reports I get from across the state indicate a lot of kicker points, extra mass, great growth up till this point, and there's no reason whatsoever they shouldn't finish off in fine fashion, because we've had, as you know, abundant rain, very, very lush vegetation. So it's been a real good season for that. Dove season's around the corner, and despite all the rain and storms, I'm seeing some pretty decent indications of what I will call at least average reproduction by the doves. I've been scouting wheat fields that are being harvested right now and have been being harvested for the last couple of weeks, and they are drawing lots of doves. So hopefully we might have a good dove season opener for a change. We've had weather fronts and violent storms and a lot of things interfere with our dove populations during the time when the season is open for the last couple of years. So I'm got my fingers crossed that this one will be a little bit different. Turkey poult disparities, by that I mean differences in sizes of the poults, are still amazing. I had friends of mine, several friends, talk about poults that weren't much bigger than a sparrow 2 weeks ago, which means a late June breeding at the earliest, or latest, I guess I should say. And they have continued to give me reports of poults anywhere from the size of the sparrows I mentioned to a small pigeon to a decent-sized chicken. So the early hatches are much, much larger than the late hatch. The late hatch, I think, is going to be a big part of the equation. I'm not looking for a banner hatch across the board, but I will say that the late hatching effort shows some promise in several areas that I'm familiar with, and that runs all the way from over in the mountains to West Kentucky, Central, and North as well. So I'm sure you folks have probably been seeing turkeys with some poults on your trail cameras. I'm sure you're also in field observations for deer and actually looking for turkeys. You've noticed that there's small groups or bands of hens that don't have any poults at all. And that's been very consistent in every region of the state. So it has not been a great year for turkey reproduction, but again, there's a glimmer of hope that these late hatches will helpfully try to keep populations somewhat level as we go forward. We've been in a decline with the turkey flock for the last several years, as most of you are aware. There's a variety of factors there. We've had real wet springs, which are not conducive to poult survival because of hypothermia from being wet and cold. We've also had tremendous amount of predation on the nest from raccoons, the poults and the nesting hens by coyotes, and avian predators like red-tailed hawks and great horned owls have a significant impact on the poults as well. So they face a pretty fierce onslaught, And this was predictable. I never will forget when we were stocking turkeys in the state. George Wright, who was the preeminent biologist that established our turkey flock, predicted there'll come a place in time where every critter in the woods has got turkey on their menu. And what he meant by that was they'll start preying upon them and realizing that they're a species that is out there and available. And they've gone to work on them. There isn't any question about it. There's a lot of other factors that can enter into it, diseases and what have you. But I personally think predation and the loss of poults due to aberrant weather are the two biggest factors that we're seeing the results of. All right, folks, I got to go to break here. This break is presented by SMI Marine, 11400 Westport Road, just north of the Gene Snyder. The 2021s are rolling in. You need to check with them. Put in your order now. And remember, you never get soaked by my friends at SMI Marine. And we're back on Jim Strader Outdoors. Again, we're doing another special edition of Jim Strader Outdoors tonight in that we're going to talk to you about ticks. And, folks, I want to set the plate here and tell you that some of this will probably scare the hell out of you, and that's not an accident. You need to protect yourself from these critters. They're not just bad news. They're really bad news on a Richter scale compared to a lot of things like COVID, for example. COVID's horrible, and it affects certain people in a horrible fashion, but most people skate through it. This stuff, if you get these diseases, you'll probably have a lifelong sentence of various maladies, things that run the gamut from arthritis to heart disease to even get into meningitis or hepatitis. I mean, these diseases are very, very serious. And my buddy Bob Edwards, who works at Dick's Sporting Goods, is here with me. And the main reason we're doing this tonight is now's the time a lot of folks are getting out of doors. As I mentioned in the opening statement, we got squirrel season, we got dove season coming. People are scouting and putting out deer stands, they're checking trail cameras, working dove fields, fishing around lakes and ponds and streams, which are tick paradise for many of these species. So I felt a real grave responsibility to you folks to spend your time outdoors to let you know just how serious this is. Bob, welcome aboard. Glad to have you.
Glad to be here, Jim. Thanks.
And, you know, in your business, you have to inform people all the time because you all sell tick products, tick deterring products, that is.
Yes.
You sell products with DEET that's good for mosquitoes and other types of critters that are troublesome to outdoor folks. But the ticks are the ones that on average carry the really bad diseases.
In Kentucky, yes.
I mean, it's just Kentucky, Southern Indiana, Ohio, our whole region right. of the country, they're the big problem. Now, folks, neither of us are presenting ourselves as experts on this. However, I will say that in my own realm of existence, I have been bitten by hundreds, if not thousands, of ticks. I have some arthritic conditions that flare up from time to time that I feel fairly certain come from that. I'm no stranger to wildlife diseases. I've had West Nile disease, for example, Bob, and we're going to talk a little bit about it. That's primarily carried by mosquitoes that bite birds,
yes.
certain species of birds. I had that a couple of decades ago, and it just about killed me. I mean, it about took me out. I was in Canada. On a television show shoot and came down with it, and I thought I was going to die. I've never had such a fever, headache, symptoms that lasted for weeks. My niece has got Lyme's disease. I can't even name the number of friends that I've got that got tick diseases, ranging from Lyme disease to alpha gal to Rocky Mountain spotted fever. You have been bitten by ticks many, many times, and you in particular have had around with meningitis, which one of your doctors was very suspicious. Ticks might have been the culprit.
Yes.
So I can't overemphasize how ugly these diseases are.
Yes.
So, Bob, you've done a tremendous amount of research for the show tonight. I'd like you to talk a little bit about where your information has come from and how you put this together.
The information for tonight's show was gathered from the Health and Human Services Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the World Health Organization, the Kentucky Department of Fish and Wildlife Resources, University of Kentucky, Environmental Protection Agency, the United States Department of Defense, and various manufacturers of some of the protectants that we're going to be discussing later. For context, from the information from manufacturers, I didn't really use data from it. I only used that information for things like dosage information, spelling, that sort of thing.
Okay.
For the actual what works, what doesn't work, what's safe, all that, that I used typically government information.
Okay, very good. And which of these organizations did you feel were the most helpful for you in the research? I know you particularly pointed to the Kentucky Department of Fish and Wildlife Resources as apparently an excellent site.
They have an excellent page on their website that discusses ticks in Kentucky, how to prevent, how to do everything. It's easy to find, easy to use, tremendous resource. They, too, sourced the Centers for Disease Control for their information. The Centers for Disease Control website has page after page of information about the ticks, about the diseases, about prevention, and is very, very useful information, and it's in a form that's pretty easy to understand.
All right. I noticed you got the United States Department of Defense here, and they are an excellent source because they've dealt with ticks worldwide in one fashion or another.
They are an excellent source on all manner of things. Their information is not in a user-friendly format typically, so it's a handful if you want to try to dive in and tackle that. But at the end of the day, they have the resource. They are using permethrin-based products. The uniforms now have that made into the fabric. They use it for sleeping bags. They use it for all manner of things. And they use it in ways that an individual never would. And the amount of research that they've done is unbelievable. The amount of health research that they've done is unbelievable.
Yes, and there's a lot of myth or misinformation out there about permethrin and some of these insecticides. So we'll talk about that as we get into the preventatives and what that does. I think this is going to be very informational because a lot of us have been a little bit scared of permethrin. So we'll talk about all that. Coming back from great break, we'll talk about the ticks that are in our region, what they look like. We'll give a little information about that for educational purposes and give you a rundown on what kind of diseases they carry. This break is presented by Mossy Oak Properties Heart Realty. They're located in Munfordville, Kentucky, right in the heart of some of our best hunting and fishing. Have listings all over the state. Paul Thomas is the broker. He's a hunter and a fisherman and do a great job with you. Check out their listings at mophrtrealty.com. And we're back on Jim Strader Outdoors. And again, we're talking about ticks, tick diseases, and how to prevent yourself from getting those maladies from these nasty little critters. And I've got Bob Edwards with Dick's Sporting Goods here with me tonight. Bob, let's go here into the tick species that are found in Kentucky, and then we're going to kind of expand on that and explain the difference is in some of these species and the diseases they might carry.
The prevalent ticks in Kentucky are deer tick, a lone star tick, an American dog or wood tick, a Gulf Coast tick, a brown dog tick, and a new one now, an Asian longhorn tick. a deer tick being the most common for most of us to bump into. Deer ticks find themselves on deer and people.
Well, the big thing about this species of tick, and it's the one that is extremely problematic, it's one of the main vectors or carriers of Lyme disease.
That's correct.
And tick paralysis, and a lot of other nasty diseases that I can't even pronounce. But we all know that our greatest risk with these tends to be spring, summer, and fall. But adults are out about any time in the winter when temperatures are above freezing. And the nymph stages and adult females are the ones that seem to cause the most problems. But here's what I want to say about this. I have, for the last several years, as have all my friends and probably you, been out in the winter. In December, I was pulling ticks off myself and my dog last year when I was squirrel hunting, for example. During deer season, lots of my friends got ticks from field dressing deer. And, you know, most people say, well, once you got frost, that's over with.
That's incorrect.
That is not the case. Don't even think that way, because it's just not the way it is. And so the important thing to say about this particular species starting out is the fact that it definitely can be almost year-round. I wouldn't look for one in the driven snow or when it's been 20 degrees for 4 or 5 days. But I can tell you, I've had them crawl on me after day of freezing temperatures during a warm spell.
Yes, as soon as it's above freezing, they'll become active again. And from my time working at the taxidermy shop, I can tell you that in the middle of deer season, all the way through the late seasons, deer are covered with them.
Yes, sir. All right, the Lone Star tick, and it is a very common tick. It's the one that has the little spot on its back, and it carries nasty stuff like ehrlichiosis. Now, ehrlichiosis is similar in some of its symptoms to Lyme disease, and we'll go into a discussion about that, but I have buddies that have had ehrlichiosis, and it is horrible. Hearing loss, persistent fever, all kind of neurological symptoms that come in with this one. It can carry tularemia, which is commonly known as rabbit fever. And there's a lot of thought that the tularemia outbreak in rabbits in West Kentucky came probably in some way, shape, or fashion through the Lone Star ticks. It also carries Rocky Mountain spotted fever and alpha gal. We're going to talk about alpha gal later, and that's one of the weird, really bad things that ticks are carrying now that cause you to be allergic to eating red meat. So this is a very aggressive tick. The female has the white dotted Lone Star on her back, which is where the name comes from. And they seem to produce a very pretty noticeable reaction in almost anybody. I have been bitten by them so many times that I am extremely sensitive to their bite, to the point where when they insert their toothy parts into my skin, I immediately know it. I mean, it's just a very, very bad thing. The American dog or wood tick, again, a vector for tularemia, tick paralysis, the spotted fevers. These are generally spring and summer insects. They look very similar to the black-legged or deer tick, but they're a little different. Gulf Coast tick. I'm not totally familiar with this one. It was probably around, and I probably had them on me and didn't know the difference. But they carry spotted fever, tick paralysis, and canine hepatozoonosis. Excuse me on the pronunciation here, folks. I'm a low-tech redneck, and I'm no scientist, but that's a form of a disease that they carry. Brown dog tick. This is a very common tick, and a big one for dog ehrlichiosis and spotted fever. Dogs are one of the primary hosts for the brown tick. but it also is known to be on humans. Bob, I'm sure you, just like I, have seen dogs absolutely riddled with these things. I mean, I've seen dogs that were pitiful to the point they probably needed to be put down. They were so affected by them and had them all over. That kind of rounds out really the species in Kentucky that are the common ones that we've been talking about. And
we have a new player now.
Yes. Let's go into this one a little.
We have an Asian longhorn tick. This has been found in the United States in 2017. These ticks have been found on pets, livestock, wildlife, people, everything, like any other. In Kentucky, they've been found on elk, bears, cattle. These are unique in that the female ticks can lay eggs and reproduce without mating. They also lay eggs by the thousands. So these can go from a small amount to an astounding amount very quickly. There's evidence of cattle that they've just drained down to where they were wasted away to nothing.
Well, some of the studies that were quoted say that the longhorn tick appears to be less attracted to humans. But however, I think that remains to be seen as they proliferate.
Right.
Number one. Number two, the Centers for Disease Control and those folks said that with ongoing testing of ticks collected in the U.S., it's likely that some of the ticks will be found to contain germs that can be harmful to people. Well, here's what I'm going to say, folks. Any tick's bad news. Any of the ticks that we named or found, and I will include this one in the Duke's list here that we put together simply because it's only safe to assume that they can be harmful. That's the thing.
So that they've only been here for a brief time means that there's not extensive testing and that they're not widely found. As of this year, they are found in 12 states, so they're here and spreading, or they're already there and are just being found in those states.
Well, one recent study found that the tick is not likely to contribute to Lyme disease bacteria. However, another laboratory study found that the tick has the ability to carry and spread Rocky Mountain spotted fever. And folks, Rocky Mountain spotted fever is here. For years, folks were very loath to believe that. A lot of doctors honestly didn't have enough information or firsthand experience with tick diseases to realize what they were dealing with. But just as recently as the last couple of years, I have several people in my acquaintance that have come down with Rocky Mountain spotted fever, and it is a really, really bad disease. All right, that's kind of a round out of the species that we have. Coming back from break, we're going to talk a little bit more about our common ticks, the things they carry, when you're likely to see them, and hopefully that information will be useful to you as well. This break is presented by SMI Marine. They're my buddies over on Westport Road, just north of the Gene Snyder. The 2021 boats are in. They've got all kind of pontoons, bass boats, aluminum boats. They got a new line of low aluminum boats in now. Go see them. They'll take great care of you. And remember, you never get soaked by my friends at SMI Marine. Hey, we're back on Jim Strader Outdoors. And again, we're talking about ticks tonight. I've got Bob Evers, my buddy who works at Dick's Sporting Goods, here with me. And I guess, Bob, let's at this point go into the three most common ticks that people are likely to run into.
The deer tick is probably the one that's most common. These things are active anytime that it's above freezing. They feed on whitetail deer and us. They are deep forest tick.
All right. Then we got the American dog tick. And these little boogers are really bad news. And I might add, anytime you're out of doors, you may just be on a ball field somewhere.
That's very important. And that's one thing I wanted to touch on when we get to that segment, is that this isn't just about hunters and fishermen. This is about if your kid plays on a ball team.
Yep.
If he's on a soccer field or football field or baseball field.
If there's deer in that area, if there's squirrels, if there's rabbits.
Right. None of that matters. The main vector for these things is mice. And there's mice everywhere.
Well, to your point, but there's all kind of critters that carry it. So I guess what I'm trying to say, which are common around ballparks.
Yes.
So they're generally, you know, a spring through late summer tick, but their larvae are everywhere. I mean, they're a real problem.
Yes.
Then you got the Lone Star. Talk a little bit about it.
The Lone Star, these are wooded areas, wooded edges. I have had so many of these things on me, and you get them from cutting firewood, from putting up tree stands, the kind of areas where you tend to be doing things that we do, that's where they want to be.
Yep.
What the professionals call questing is these ticks grab leaves and such with their back legs, and they reach out with their front legs, and when something walks by, they grab onto it. And I don't know whether you've ever actually seen that happen or not.
Oh, it's happened to me hundreds of times.
But I've been turkey hunting, sitting down, being real quiet and still, and look up and realize the bush in front of me is just thick with these things, and they were doing that. They were hanging on with their back legs and reaching out.
Well, the problem with these critters is they are so prevalent in wooded and grassy areas that you just got to assume they're out there. You can't go into the woods or places where perhaps you haven't had ticks before now and assume that they're not going to be a problem. So there's some differences between these ticks. The two species, the Lone Star and the dog tick, they're the most common during the summer. But their nymphal and larval stages pop up all throughout that period, and they tend to carry the spotted fever and the alpha gal meat allergy. In the case of the spotted fever, it's the American dog tick, and in the alpha gal, red meat allergy, which we're going to talk about extensively, that's in the Lone Star. So, and again, I don't know how many friends and acquaintances that have had all these diseases. There was a real bad outbreak of the Rocky Mountain spotted fever in Trimble County a couple of years ago. And several of my friends contracted that disease, and it rim-wrecked them. You know, they thought they had pneumonia. The doctors thought they had the flu or pneumonia. Turns out, nope, you got Rocky Mountain spotted fever. So,
Lyme disease has been most likely underdiagnosed for decades.
Absolutely.
And it's because who knew?
And the deer tick's the one that's really, really bad for that.
Yes. The Centers for Disease Control cites that Lyme disease affected an estimated 450,000 people in 2018, a 1,400% increase from in the past.
Well, and this is the tick again. While the other ticks are common from October through May, or May through October, however you want to look at that, these jokers are out any day above freezing. Any day could be, and they're the ones that I come into contact with. So balmy days in February, March, you know, people that are out scouting for turkeys or working food plots and what have you, they're susceptible. And then again, when you get into deer season, these are the ticks that tend to be very prevalent on deer carcasses, in areas that deer frequent. Where are we? In areas that deer frequent. So, what's the old saying? You pays your money, you takes your chances. So, we're going to talk again more about this here in a little bit, but Lyme disease in particular is really ugly because it mimics so many other things. It mimics the common cold. It mimics the flu. People that have it tend to be fatigued. Later on, develop joint pain and a rash. My bird dog, Flirt, from years ago, she had Lyme disease, and it caused a permanent limp in her front left leg. In her later life, she was not the dog she should have been because of this ugly disease. So these are some things that folks definitely need to think about. And again, the blackleg tick is the one that you mentioned. They hang around on bushes. You know, a lot of these ticks come up from the ground, particularly the larval type of ticks. But you just walking through the woods brushing against stuff, you're going to get them.
Yes.
And this brings up a subject that I think we need to mention here right quick. You're going to get these critters when you squirrel hunt, because what are you doing? You're prowling through wooded habitat, and you're all the time brushing up against bushes and leaves.
And at the time that they're very most prevalent.
Absolutely. So that is a really tough scenario and one that we need to think about. These black-legged ticks or deer ticks tend to seek out thin-skinned areas where they can plug in and then drink blood to develop their life cycle. These backward-facing spines in their mouth parts provide almost a cement that helps anchor them in place. And because of that, you got to be very careful how you take them off. Again, we're going to talk more about that in the second hour. But these critters they're a serious problem. I mean, I won't say that I'm afraid of them, but, buddy, I'm very aware of them. I'll put this in a perspective that might shock people. I'm 100 times more afraid of ticks than I am poisonous snakes in our environment.
And rightfully so.
That's the thing I want to pass along. All right, folks, we got to go to break here. This break is presented by Mossy Oak Properties Heart Realty. Paul Thomas is a broker. Great outdoor properties from farms to wildlife management properties and vacation homes and cabins on rivers and lakes. Check them out at MOPHART Realty.com.